You are listening to engaging and exciting conversation on the Radiant Culture Podcast.
Get ready.
Now. Welcome, everyone. You're listening to the Radiant Culture Podcast. My name is D-Mac.
And I'm Cookie Monster.
And today we have the pleasure of having PC in the building. What's up, Pastor Greg?
Hello, everybody. I'm excited to be here. God bless you all. I'm sure we're going to have a wonderful time today.
We are. I was just commenting that PC is anything but PC. He is not politically correct. He tells it like it is.
And he's not Philip Kiangwa.
No, he's not that either. But yeah, he's someone who you can rely on to tell you the God honest truth, whether you want to hear it or not. But it gives life at the end of the day, I feel. So yeah, we're happy to have you today. And today we're tackling an issue following on from the previous episodes which we aired, which were about lobola and marriage and relationships. Yeah. So now we're talking about getting ready to be a married somebody. And the steps that we take in order to ready ourselves for that. And one of those steps is premarital counseling, which a lot of churches encourage, which I encourage, as a very necessary step to take before you walk down the aisle.
Someone who's now qualified to talk about it.
Yeah, I can talk about it from first-hand experience. Yeah. I didn't know what I was in for, to be honest. Like, because some people do it in like a month and they're done with. I've been at it now for like a year. But that's also because we took a long break. But yeah, I mean, it's been very enlightening. Very, very enlightening. And they actually say there's a couple at our church who counsels, and they say their strategy is to literally try and throw everything at you that could break you to see if you guys actually meant for each other. I was like, guys, what kind of strategy is that, bruh? Breaking up people before they even get married. Yeah. But yeah, Pastor Craig, you are a premarital counselor, right?
Yes.
You're on the other side of the equation. And what is it like when you get this couple come in for the first time and they're nervous and they don't know what to expect? And what do you tell them in that initial session to look forward to for the rest of the however many sessions you're going to have?
Wow. We tell them a lot. Like you just said, premarital counseling can be very all-encompassing. Mm. It can be very long. Of course, sometimes it's brief. But if we just to talk from the very onset, or maybe let me just track back and say, unfortunately, for my kind of experience is normally people you know.
Right.
And not so much people you're meeting with for the first time. So you have an idea who you're already dealing with. But supposing I was meeting somebody from the very go for the very first time, what's the thing that I would tell them? Well, I'll tell them to look forward to marriage. That's number one.
Right.
Look forward to marriage.
Yeah.
Marriage is a good thing. It's probably the best thing that's ever going to happen to you. And since we are believers, I would also tell them, like many people do teach, this is the institution that sits highest above all other human institutions as established by God at the very, very beginning. So get ready for a very exciting trip. That's what I would say at the very onset. Mm.
So do you recommend that people choose a counselor who they know, or it's fine to just... I mean, if you hopefully you're attending a church, you just go to the ministry that deals with that, get allocated someone, and
I would definitely recommend you, obviously, to deal with people who know you, because by the mere fact that I know you, there's certain elements about an individual that you are bound to appreciate, which could have an effect on marriage. I mean, when you look at counseling, even as a general discipline, art. Or way of doing things, it's never that it's a one size fits all kind of approach to it.
Right.
So there's certain principles. In fact, there's generic principles, but how they're applied from individual to individual is bound to be different. That kind of a thing. So I would obviously recommend that generally people deal with people that know them.
Yeah.
Right. For a number of reasons. for a number of reasons. Let me just give one particular one. One of the things I love telling singles is you think you know your spouse until you get married.
Yeah.
You know? And I actually like using myself as an example that there are certain things I didn't know about myself until I was married. I'll mention two particular things. What kind of a husband I was going to be.
Yeah.
You see, in other words, how I would respond to certain scenarios.
Right.
So even though I knew I should be a good husband and so forth, but I never, there's certain things because I'd never stayed with somebody that I had no appreciation of simply because I wasn't in that kind of scenario. The same thing, again, I can say about me as a parent. I never really knew, you know, we planned, we prayed, we dreamed, we talked about what kind of kids would have.
Yeah.
But for me, it never really occurred to me what kind of a parent I was actually going to become.
Right.
And I only saw this now that I actually got married. Now, coupled with this, there are certain things that, say, somebody who's above me would know about my personality, which can then fit and tie into a counseling setup, which would be very expedient and important for me. Not just personality-wise, but even things about my past or things about my life. So when a couple is coming together, the assumption is that everybody knows everything. I don't know if that's a very good assumption. But, you know, sometimes couples don't always have, prior to the marriage, a certain key information about each other, which is necessary to consider, all right, or to at least deal or address prior to them going on to this very important journey.
Yeah.
So that's some, that's one of the reasons why just getting to know the people, or at least knowing the people you're dealing with, is particularly important. It makes a lot of things easy.
Right. I guess sort of tagging on to that point that you just mentioned about the importance of knowing, or I guess bringing things to the table that a couple wouldn't ordinarily bring up outside of a counseling session, right, about each other. I guess my question is actually on the importance of premarital counseling. Of course, different churches have different models that they use. And but the one sort of central thing seems to be that, you know, you need to do some sort of counseling before you take that that next step. So I guess my question would be that, why is it so important, right? And has it also not just become a tradition where, you know, because I'm part of a church and this is part of the process of getting married, you know, is what is the actual importance of engaging in the premarital counseling?
Number one is preparation. Preparation for marriage. I must quickly qualify this by saying you can never be fully prepared for marriage. But you need to be prepared for marriage. So counseling comes in, as far as I'm concerned, to prepare both partners for this journey that they what that they're about to get into as a collective body, and then obviously them as individuals, the roles. If you want, if you want, I can say the do's and the don'ts. Of course, I don't really like that. But I'm just trying to say, you know, you're preparing the people for what they're about to get into.
Yeah.
Without adequate preparation, they may struggle or ultimately fail. Yesterday, I was having a very heart-to-heart conversation with one of our members, a single gentleman. From our church. I'm just talking about preparation here. Then I was telling him some, I was just debunking some myths, you know, some Christian myths about marriage. And I was saying, you know, that it's possible for a marriage made in heaven to fail. I was actually saying there's two reasons, there's two main reasons why, as far as I'm concerned, overarching reasons why marriages fail. Right? And I actually have a theory that One contributes 10% of all the divorces and the other is 90%.
I want
to hear this. But listen, these are overarching reasons. The first reasons why marriages fail is selection. You chose the wrong person in the very first instance.
So that's the 10%.
For me, that's 10%.
You can do will or
you see, so regardless of what kind of a person you are, this thing is going nowhere. Sooner or later, it's going to tank.
Right.
I believe that 10% of the marriages that fail, right, they fail because of wrong selection. 90%, this is a theory.
That's a hot one right there. Anyway,
this is a theory. 90% is what people do when they get married, okay. which is what makes them fail. Mm-hmm. Let me get back to my story now. So I was having this heart-to-heart discussion with him, and I was saying, marriage is made in heaven, can fail. It doesn't take it. You know, Christians, you know, they want a virgin. Were you a virgin? Was I a virgin? Were we Christians? Were we all? You know, people like that can still fail.
Yeah.
If they are not prepared. It's not so much they selected wrong, but they did wrong when they were in the marriage. Mm-hmm. There are certain things they failed to do well.
Yeah.
I actually say there, as my own research has shown, that marriages that don't divorce have four main characteristics or attributes of any marriage or relationship, for that matter, that doesn't end. But wait, so I said a marriage made in heaven can fail if people do the wrong thing. Then I went on to the other side, and I said, you know that a marriage made in the bar, can actually make it.
Yeah.
If these people who just stumbled into each other, you know, he had his girlfriend, but he just met her, and then they had a good time, and then, I'm pregnant, and we got to go together, and let's just start, and you discover that they do
really well.
40 years together, or life together.
Mm. Uh-huh.
Even though, really, if you look at it, by all intents and purpose, that was wrong selection.
Right.
But what they did post that part is what was critical.
Mm.
So when we come to premarital counseling, one of the things it's doing is preparing you guys for the journey that's ahead. What I'm going to say next, in terms of the importance there as well, is that besides the aspect of preparation, it almost comes back to preparation again. I like to say it's helping to divorce-proof a marriage.
Right.
Even though you could actually say it's part of preparation.
Yeah.
At any given time, every marriage must be divorce-proofed.
Okay.
Right. So one of the things that premarital counseling is doing, I'm just separating it. You could put it in preparation, but I'm wanting to separate it here to say perhaps there's certain aspects you need to know about how to get along and how to obviously run marriage, but also particularly to look at certain aspects that must specifically prepare the partners, not really prepare, but inform, advise, and empower you guys, you know, to avoid and evade divorce when it comes. And guess what? Anyone who's been married long enough will tell you that the idea of splitting happened at some stage. So every marriage, every car before it goes out of the assembly line, it gets shock absorbers.
Yeah.
Right? They put those in so that when it's hitting whatever it is on the road, it's able to withstand the pressure and still be standing. Every marriage, by the time we get in, you know, we must be in a place where, to some extent, the marriage has got a divorce-proofing element that's in there. And then I come back to say, remember, it all doesn't happen through premarital counseling. It's all a process, but it's very crucial for it to happen at this stage and moment in marriage. Yeah.
Mm. Wow, this is... okay. I just want to go back to a point that you brought up, the 10%. That's 10%. Because, you know, I feel like it's something that we don't talk about enough, especially in Christian circles, where it's like, you know, the guy's, you know, he's spirit-filled and he loves God and she loves God. And then they got together and then, you know, things happen. They get married and they do everything right, so to speak.
Yeah.
But then I've also kind of seen something that's kind of, it concerns me a little bit with some married people, not everyone, but with some married people that I know, where it almost feels like they're married, they're good people, they're God-loving and everything, but there's like no chemistry, or there's, you know what I mean, where you kind of think, but you guys, it feels like you're just doing it.
Absolutely.
And sometimes when you see couples like that, you don't feel... drawn
inspired.
To the whole idea of marriage, you know what I'm saying? So is that part of that?
This is possibly firstly, those kinds of couples, for me, or those kinds of scenarios, and there are plenty of them, you know, expose why it's important to go through premarital counseling. But as you can already see, remember I say 10% is selection, 90% is what you do.
Right.
So beyond the pre part of marriage, there must be the post. You see, a marriage is a car. I always give an analogy of a car when I discuss marriage. Marriage is a car. Both of you guys are the passengers in it, right? I normally like to say that the husband is the driver And then I normally say either you've got a good car, bad driver, good car, and so forth, bad driver, bad car, etc., etc., etc. But, you know, when you have a car, post you're buying a very good car, mm-hmm. one of the things that must happen to a car is maintenance,
yeah.
correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of people get a car fresh, freshly minted, freshly new car smell and everything else,
yeah.
and that's fine and fair.
Mm-hmm.
But what they do beyond getting that car is the reason why the car then is rugged.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then another person who sees a bad car, misused, battered, oil leaks, smoke, and so forth, can then make an assumption or a conclusion to say cars are bad.
Yeah.
The car isn't really bad. It's the people that are managing that kind of a car.
Right.
So when you're getting into premarital counseling, now is helping you to maintain a very good car that you've got.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about this car is, remember, we don't trade it in for a new one,
mm-hmm.
right? How you're looking at this kind of thing is you've got this one. It's like your body, okay?
Yeah.
It's the only one you've got.
Yeah.
And we expecting you to really keep this on and on and on and on. So premarital counseling is coming to teach a person, you know, what to do, what not to do, how to basically carry themselves and make it a very worthwhile experience.
Yeah.
Mm.
So when would you recommend in their journey that a couple should start doing premarital counseling?
As soon as the decision to get married comes in.
Okay.
As soon as the decision to get married is coming. So you've proposed to each other, you've done your engagements. Of course, I know engagements is a whole different subject altogether, because it's done differently in different places.
Yeah.
But I'm saying the moment the parties have said, we want to get married.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Obviously, I'm assuming that they're going to formalize the process regarding if there's lobola and bride prices and things like that,
yeah.
and obviously wedding dates. You want to at least give it a significant portion of time prior to your wedding day. So I would say at least 6 months prior to your getting married.
Okay.
And then I wouldn't also say people go out for 5 years before you get married. And
right.
That's another subject altogether. But at least, at the very least, you want to give it probably more than 6 months before you get married. The other reason why is because some people in organizing marriages and weddings, you see, they are so bogged down into the event
mm-hmm.
that even if you bring them for counseling, they've got no emotional energy to really get concepts, learn, talk, without being bogged down about how to organize just a one-day event, which is important, which is a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
So the further back you go, at least you're a bit more relaxed and you've got a bit more time and less pressure to actually learn, listen, talk, express yourselves, and then obviously get the wisdom you must for marriage.
All right.
Have you had any instances where after doing a premarital counseling process with a couple,
mm-hmm.
they ended up deciding not to go ahead with the marriage as a result of the
premarital counseling?
Yes.
Really? Really? Why? Because possibly before, like I said, most of the people you're dealing with, you know.
Yeah.
So before they're married, there's certain hard questions. Not before they're married, sorry. Before the point of premarital counseling,
mm-hmm.
there's certain hard questions I love to ask. Right, like the HIV questions. Right, I love to ask those.
Give us two of those.
For instance, you love her. Praise God. What if you discover that if you're negative, for instance, and you discover she's positive, are you going to go ahead with it? What if you discover the dude or the owner has got a child, right, or the girl has got something? What if you discover that your partner used to go out with an undesirable person?
Mm-hmm.
There's a range of questions that you know that can act as a sieve.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a range of questions, but there's a type of discussion.
Yeah.
I'm talking about prior the moment of actually deciding to get married.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That can actually make that discussion not even be relevant at the point of premarital counseling.
Okay.
So the same people when you've talked to you discover that, hey, actually such and such a person is trying to be in a relationship with this person for marriage, but actually still caught up in a previous relationship.
Right.
So before it's even gone that far,
yeah,
all right, it's usually split. So in terms of practical scenarios where people after that, they say, no, I've never encountered such, no.
Okay.
Interesting. So what kind of topics or subjects should be covered in? I know different churches do it differently. Some use booklets, some use online methods, whatever the case may be.
Yes,
is that really counseling though? But yeah, there's different methods, but I'm sure there's like a common denominator in terms of the subjects that should be covered. So
what must be covered?
Yeah.
Yes, and I must be very careful how I speak.
Mm-hmm.
I would expect.
Yeah.
Okay, allow me to speak from my context, yeah, and where I'm coming from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With all due respect to what everybody else is teaching, because remember, we can just give the same wisdom, but from different angles.
Yeah.
I would expect the very first thing a couple must be taught about is just... not really, let me not say taught, but what they must grasp through the counseling,
mm-hmm,
whichever style it goes,
yeah,
is the marriage institution.
Mm-hmm.
What the marriage institution really is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What is the marriage institution? What are we talking about when we're talking about marriage? How does it operate?
Yeah.
Where is it in the plan, in the context of God? Before we talk about how to be married.
Yeah.
Right, or how to do married.
Mm-hmm.
Right, what is this thing? I actually believe that's probably one of the reasons why people end up disrespecting it, because they don't really understand its value in, yeah, the sight of God in the way that it should be.
Yeah.
Right. So I believe that just an understanding of what the marriage institution is, I think that's very important. There is a broad range of other topics, obviously, that must, yeah, be looked at. Communication.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me track back to what I said. When I have looked at marriages all over the world,
mm-hmm,
just by mere observation and study, I noticed that marriages that don't die, that are permanent, have four main components.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm mentioning this, because I would then expect probably, and I see these things being dealt with in different contexts.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, I noticed that divorce is never a factor,
okay,
in marriages that don't end.
Right.
And I'm not talking about Christian marriages. I'm talking about any marriage
across the board, yeah,
that has never ended. I tend to notice that usually when the question of divorce is never in there, is likely never to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to notice that. I normally call that the vision bit.
Okay.
Right, the vision of a marriage. I also talk about love. A marriage where true love is. Again, there's an assumption that people know what love is. Right? Mm-hmm. There's an assumption that it's well taught or it's well explained. But after 10 years, I love my wife, but I don't love my wife. You know, as in I'm not feeling some physical attraction about her. And, you know, I just can't wait to go lift her up and so forth and so forth. Love moves from being a feeling to a decision.
Yeah.
People don't always know that aspect about love.
I don't think we like hearing that, actually.
You see, but after a while, you know, that's what it's about, communication. Communication. Again. What I notice is that people think they know how to communicate up until they're in a relationship sometimes. And then they discover, hey, actually, we may not be as efficient. So they need to be taught that. And having a support system, marriages that never die. One of the things I've seen is they've got very strong... So they've got very strong support systems, just like the body needs a skeleton,
mm-hmm,
to hold it up. So I'm thinking if people are being given premarital counseling, this needs to come in.
Right.
Then there's soft. Excuse the word soft, but there's common topics. Your finances, right? That can be an issue. Sex. What lots of premarital counselors would tell.
Is it a soft area? If I'm a soft area.
Yes. Yes. What do I mean?
Yeah.
let me explain. The reason why I laughed just a few seconds ago is because what I've realized is normally the single person thinks that they know, and excuse me, my viewers, what I'm about to say,
uh-huh,
they know how to really do sex properly. you know, right up until they get married. And unfortunately, the thing about sex is that it's such a touchy topic, you know.
Pastor, you're bursting my bubble, right?
Yes. It's such a touchy topic that once it's happening in a marriage, it's not like a couple has got the liberty to be very open about how sex is happening.
Yeah. Right.
So now, without proper training and instruction for it, you may have some challenges, right? You may probably have some challenges. And remember, I'm saying this out of experience. Normally, the single guy thinks that he knows how to have sex properly.
But we know.
I like that. Right, I like that. And now, unfortunately, I've just talked about the sexual act and not the whole be-all, end-all about sex as it relates to marriage.
Yeah.
And I'm saying this because the average person, by the time they're married, either they're seeing sex, reading sex, hearing sex, or probably engaging in some sort of sex.
Right.
But unfortunately, when you sit down with people to really hear hearts, minds, and thoughts regarding that subject, you then discover that, there's a lot that's unsaid, a lot that's unknown, a lot that's assumed.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, if a person gets into marriage without knowing, my goodness me, they may fail to enjoy fully that a gift which God has given them and offered for them. So people need to know that. Why do I put it around the soft things? Because the fact is, you know, sex is frequent in your young days.
Yeah.
But as you go in with time.
Oh, you mean your young days as a couple?
Young days as a couple.
Mm-hmm. It's just
not your young
sure.
single days. But as the marriage is growing longer, the frequency of sex obviously declines.
Okay.
Right? By the time you become grandparents or great grandparents, sex definitely isn't what holds a marriage together.
True.
If sex brought people together, then what if there's an opportunity to get it somewhere else?
Right.
You see, it's not a very strong strand that's going to likely keep a marriage together, as opposed to friendship and companionship, which is really built out of communication.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to some people, and you guys know all this fact.
Yeah.
Talking is not communication.
Yeah.
But I said, do you know that you can never have communication without talking?
Mm-hmm.
So you see, so there's something about a healthy and a strong communication base that builds an intimacy, that brings out a friendship, that makes you guys so stickable to each other that nothing, no one, no situation can actually ever take you away from. And by the way, when we're talking about premarital counseling, the worst thing we can ever do is just to try to get people married so that they don't divorce. Like you said, people shouldn't just be married on paper and fail to enjoy that that kind of marriage. So you're teaching these people things of communication so that, you know what, they're able to build that kind of lasting and enjoyable union. What else should they teach? Let me just also mention some other important thing. When I mentioned the support structure, people must then learn how to deal with external influences into the marriage.
Yeah.
Right. And when we talk about external influences, the most common ones we are likely to think about are the relatives.
Yeah.
The first ones I would say think about are your children.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. One of this lesson, I never really got it prior to the marriage. I got it when we're in the marriage through our various couples sessions, where they clearly taught me, and I thank God we were so young, but the lesson got home, is that children are visitors. Children are visitors in your marriage, whether you like it or not. And you know, I got a young daughter right now, she's 4.
Yeah.
But one day she's going to be so happy and say, this is the best day of my life.
Bye.
Bye. Never mind the days we've had ever since she was born, you know.
Yeah.
These guys are going to be so after their own lives, they're going to leave us.
Mm.
Sometimes the couples, you know, they fall so much in love with these guys. And of course we must love them.
Yeah.
Neglecting each other, only to discover once the house or the nest is empty, they're now trying to rediscover each other. Hi, Craig, you are. So what you like doing? You know, that kind of a thing. So marriage counseling must prepare people how to deal with external parties.
Right.
Starting with kids, your family, friends. Oh, you would be shocked how that is such a factor that's hurt a number of people. but simply because people aren't taught, then you can have even church family, even your social settings, your professional setups, and so forth. So these are some of the things we must prepare people for.
All right. Yeah. So how would you navigate that if it's two people from different churches who come from perhaps different bases of teaching and they now want to get the counseling together, but so do they do at both churches or do they have to, like, what's the middle ground?
Choose one.
Choose one.
That's my recommendation. Choose one. It's just like having two different doctors trying to operate on one person. Even though the condition may be similar, the approaches may be separate. So what happens sometimes is what the truth that one person is saying can be measured against the truth which another person is saying.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you could have clashes. When actually the point being delivered is more or less the same. Right. But there could be different interpretations and understandings which can, as far as I'm concerned, bring unnecessary conflict. So with regards to the partners, let them find who they're comfortable with and then let them go there, as opposed to having many different counselors or different sets of counselors. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
All right. Then I want to ask something. Last night I was reading an article on what? There we go. I was reading an article, and it was talking about what was called, I think, the Purity Movement or something that happened some time back in the States and places like that. And it's someone who sort of came out of that, who was then talking about how after that whole thing and people were hammering on purity and waiting and all the people who went through that whole movement.
Oh, is this the guy who wrote I Kissed Dating Goodbye and then he decided that that was a load
I think that's
nonsense.
I think he probably came, Josh Harris probably came out of that whole thing. But it was on the RZIM blog site. So basically this person was talking about how a lot of the couples that waited ended up divorcing.
No, really?
I'm telling you, yeah, like, it just didn't work out the way that it had been envisioned to work out. Then there was a whole lot of other stuff, and there was a response to that comment. But one particular article that was written by another person on that thing was saying that the challenge is that as Christians, especially, you know, we're taught to look forward to marriage. So, you know, if at a certain age, everyone is sort of looking, right? Because marriage is the I've arrived sort of place. Like, I'm not married, you know, and the amount of times I get asked,
when you get married, when are you getting married?
When is it happening, right? At church, by different kinds of people. I'm just like,
is that really the be-all and end-all of everything?
Yes. Yeah. Hi, I'm good, thanks. How are you? Type thing. But it just goes to show you how, I guess, you know, there's this anticipation for marriage. Don't you also think that we've, in a way, idolized the idea of marriage as Christians to a point where when certain things then happen or when the marriage doesn't live up to what we thought it would be, you know, then people lose confidence or people actually get, because this person was actually quite angry at God, because they're like, you know what, I was promised all these things and then it just never happened the way that everyone was telling me that when you get, you know, if you wait, if you do the right thing and then you get married, Holy Spirit has got you, God is gonna carry it. So I guess what I'm trying to hear from you is where do we sort of draw the balance between the excitement for marriage and encouraging people to get married because it's a good thing, and then the other extreme, which is maybe idolizing the actual idea of marriage, you know, without looking at it realistically and practically?
Wow. Wow. If the church was to make a mistake, I would forgive them for idolizing the idea of marriage.
Right.
I could easily forgive them. Why? Because of the importance of that institution. I think marriage should be encouraged for a number of reasons, spiritual and practical reasons. But at the same time, we must draw back and then prepare people, or rather educate people, about what marriage is or what it should be. If people have a healthy understanding of it, nobody will ever have an issue with it. Right. And then we must also be very careful to separate a negative experience mm-hmm. with a good thing. There are lots of churches where abuses have happened, but the church will never be irrelevant. Right?
Yeah.
There are bad pastors, but the institution of a pastor can never be bad in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So bad marriages does not make marriage in and of itself bad as well. Where the idolization, if I can use that word, of marriage comes in, I think it's really something we must actually, to some extent, address and deal with. I've heard this marriage is not an achievement thing. To some extent, very correct. But marriage is an achievement to another extent as well,
right?
Because I've seen that kind of argument and counter argument coming. There's some people say, hey, you know, there's so much to life. Correct, mm-hmm. but it's fine and fair. If you don't want to get married, don't. Without due respect, of course, you can live life and be very fulfilled, no problem.
Yeah,
but there's so much more that can happen through the institution of marriage, and we must respect it, we must honor it,
yeah.
we must celebrate the good ones.
Right.
And obviously commiserate with those that didn't work. God must never be blamed when marriage fails. I always take people to Proverbs 19, verse 3. Mm-hmm. The New Living Translation, I think, it says people ruin their lives by their foolishness. Why does God get blamed?
Right.
You know, some people, they have issues with each other. I'm always complaining sometimes, not really complaining, but I always say, if you guys have a fight in your business where you are, mm-hmm. why does one of you stop coming for church? What did church do? You know, what did we do? Mm-hmm. Right? You right. know, so forth and so forth, didn't do this, so I'm not coming to church. But what did church do? Right. So I'm just trying to say, when marriages fail, right, or when relationships fail, normally, like I'm saying, 10 or 90%, mm-hmm. 10% was used, it was never going to work in the first place.
Right.
90% is because people either didn't get wisdom before the marriage, or they got in with that wisdom, but they ditched it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see, they just ditched it. And then when it failed, then we were pure. We were church people.
Oh, we
prayed.
Yeah.
But there are certain principles you didn't continue to live by.
Right.
Like, certain strategies of communication, faithfulness, you know,
yeah.
and so forth, praying as a family, and so forth and so forth. So God must never be blamed, right? People must be taught. So prior to the marriage, and here I think we're even writing over and above a premarital counseling, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, the church must do a good job generally to train everybody about yeah. what marriage is.
Yeah.
And even the roles of us who may not be married to certain people is a collective body
yeah.
insofar as this institution is concerned. Like I'm saying, we must encourage, we must celebrate,
mm-hmm.
we must support.
Yeah.
Remember, support structure?
Yeah.
That kind of a thing. What does it do to this institution? It shows us and continues to glorify an important institution.
Right.
Right. There must never be a time where people lose faith in marriage, because countering that is also the unions that are not where people are just staying together.
Yeah.
Where people are also just engaging in illicit sexual relations
yeah.
and the like. And then not forgetting that strong marriages build good communities.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Good communities build good societies and nations.
Yeah.
Right. One of yeah. I was reading a very, very sad statistic about South Africa mm-hmm. that is it in the world or in Africa? They have the highest rate of single parent homes. I think they were talking about 66% of children are coming from such a setting. I think so. I came yeah. across that. That scared me a lot.
Yeah.
That kind of a statistic, and I think I would need to verify it, but it was quite high
yeah.
and rather disconcerting, can explain certain societal ills
mm-hmm.
that we come across. Just certain lack of value systems.
Yeah.
So these are the offshoots of just failed marital institutions.
Mm-hmm.
So this good institution called marriage is not just something for two people to enjoy, but it's a way that God uses to build responsible citizens and proper and strong countries.
Yeah.
So nobody must ever blame their marriage or God yeah. for things that have failed.
Mm.
So it's really good.
Yeah.
And post premarital counseling, let me emphasize this for any couple that must go it or go through it, is come on guys, after the date of marriage, there must be stuff that's happening to make sure that the marriage is being enhanced.
Amen.
Right? There's no fire that can keep going, you know, if ashes are not being removed
right.
and fresh wood is being put.
Yeah.
The one of the best marital teachings I've received from a pastor is a marriage as a garden.
Yeah.
There is no garden. Mugadin. There's no garden that
imagine.
That just comes up and looks nice and is well manicured by mistake.
Right.
A well manicured garden obviously happens through a very deliberate process.
Yeah.
So the issue for many people, unfortunately, is to try to get to marriage,
mm-hmm.
but never thinking about what happens after they're married
right.
to ensure that what, you know, the thing or this wonderful institution continues to go. So there must be also a very deliberate drive to say, what are we going to do after we're married to ensure that this continues to fire? And this is part of the reason why we have a premarital counseling, because they mention these kinds of things.
Yeah,
yeah, I actually like that analogy, because then that's probably why the grass can start to look greener on the other side, because you're not watering your
you're
own
not
garden.
Yes. Yeah. You're not you're not removing the weeds.
Yeah.
You know, you're not pruning the plants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like I said, there's no perfect spouse out there.
Yeah.
What you just discover after staying together with a person is who they really are comes out, not in a bad way. But it's just that you never had the opportunity to stay with them.
Right.
So you don't know how they sleep. You don't know how they react to breakfast. You don't know their eating habits each and every day and so forth and so forth. So it's really crucial. But premarital counseling done well.
Yeah.
One of the things it does, it just doesn't make people get excited for marriage. It reminds them of their responsibility once they're married to say, hey, girl, guy, we've got work to do here to make sure that it'll work out.
Yeah.
Wow, this is so good.
Mm.
And I think, you know, one of the things that I love about what you said at the beginning is that when people approach you, what did you say about
the hard questions?
No, before the hard questions, about how we actually tell them that they're getting into a very exciting
journey.
And I think it's important because, you know, sometimes we forget that side of things as well, you know, that it is something actually very exciting.
Absolutely.
It's something worth celebrating.
That we must look forward to.
Yeah.
Something that we must look forward to. Unfortunately, society is beginning to bring out and sell stereotypes of marriage that are not very healthy.
Right.
Mm. You're getting arrested. You know? I hear some of the guys talking about that. You're losing your freedom.
Oh, your ball and chain. That's what your wife is.
Exactly. You are.
Your life sentence.
You
what?
Know, you know.
Your life sentence.
That kind of a thing.
And so,
you know, a person is getting it. They're thinking, wow, you know, life used to be nice.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting into this thing where it's not so nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was telling a certain couple the other day that, it's technically wrong for your husband, not that you're married. I was actually challenging them to say, you know, when you're married, they unfortunately did not have the experience of going through premarital counseling.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, when you get married, you need to stop acting single. Some people never quite make the switch. Can you imagine? You know, lobola, wedding, even a ring and a certificate, they actually fail to make the switch, you know, from being single to married. So as a result, you know, you get a lot of problems just out of somebody failing to make a switch. So a lot of guys are thinking, you know, so I was telling this couple to say, hey, you got to start doing things together.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
You got to start doing things together. This business of you and the boys ended.
Start wearing the design. In a tie.
The day, or jeans, or but yeah. In our case, in my marital case, and what works for us is when we wear Liverpool jerseys, you know, our marriage just vibes.
When you wear what?
Liverpool jerseys.
Oh wow!
It just vibes,
okay.
You know. So I was just telling that couple that you need to start doing things together. But what is society telling us?
Mm-hmm.
It's telling us that wow, you're getting in, you're losing your freedom. But you know what? A woman must know that me and the boys. Not that you mustn't have friends.
Yeah.
And time with friends. But sometimes I see the very extreme of that being, you know, I gotta be with the boys, got nothing to do with you, what we do is what we do, etc. This is and it, you get the impression that a guy really gains life or realizes what fun is when the moment is out. And these are some of the things that are being thrown around.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, girl secrets, things that girls do, blah, 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 and so forth and so forth, to the detriment of what marriage and the excitement it should be. Yeah. Because I see no more meaningful relationship or deep relationship that goes beyond a marriage relationship.
Mm.
Because, remember, it's a covenant.
Yeah.
Remember, the Bible says the two
become one.
So, and those spiritual connotations to it, for me, they far rise higher than just any other thing. But we're in a world where divorce is more and more popular. Getting married is less and less popular.
Yeah.
And marriage as an exciting journey is not very well spoken of.
Mm. I like that you mentioned the boys, because I know in the Zimbabwean context, a lot is done for the murora to be, or the bride to be, to quote unquote prepare her for being a wife, whether it's a kitchen tea or she sat down by the tetes and whoever and given tons of advice that she might not even be able to compute all of it, but it's there, it's available. Mm. Whereas for the man, after you've done rora, it's like, good job, mate. Yeah, you're done. Like, there's no, I wouldn't see a bachelor party as a as something that's gonna teach anyone anything, unless there's a way that Christian guys do bachelor parties that I don't know.
Yes, where they teach
each other useful things, but in my head,
we don't get funny dancers to come and entertain us.
We don't want that. So,
but
what's the advice you'd give for men, especially?
Premarital counseling is definitely a hit.
Mm.
Even if you don't have a lot of time, if done properly, what premarital counseling must do is it must compel the partners to realize that once we get married, we must do some other things.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm saying. When premarital counseling is done properly, let's even assume people had just 1 month to get into premarital counseling. If it's just done properly, one of the things it should just tell the partners is to show them that beyond marriage, you know what, we need to do something.
Yeah.
Supposedly a fire hits the house.
Yeah.
This is what we're supposed to do. Supposing we're planning, this is, you know, if it prepares the partners well, guess what? They're going to constantly be improving. Like you've already said, the meeting with the aunties is never going to teach a woman what to become.
Yeah.
You know,
she's
in fact, there's so many movies people are watching, so much discussion on social media and so many friends around that people are already being taught these things subtly.
Yeah.
So, With good counseling prior, it would train people then how to constantly learn and grow. Like I'm saying, even those people that are married for long, they still find out that there's areas and places where they must relearn some of the things they learned, or at least just continue to sharpen themselves in certain other aspects.
Mm.
I think that's how it makes things better.
So you said there is a Christian bachelor party.
There's we've done lots of Christian bachelor parties.
What depends? I'm just curious.
It depends. It depends with who you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
But all kinds of bachelor parties. Well, you've got a bride.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of entertainment. No funny people who are not males coming to dance.
Uh-huh.
And then obviously you normally invite a speaker.
Okay.
A speaker to give a talk. And in some cases, they even go further than to take the young man by himself and then have a deeper discussion, mainly relating to sexual matters.
Right.
Right. So how to handle a woman once you have to be sexual. So in those moments, I've actually seen in certain cases where beyond the larger context of the full bachelor party, the young man is actually put in aside.
Yeah.
Then there's a very good conversation that goes, sometimes with a group, sometimes with one.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But again, I won't stop emphasizing that it's before and after, because it's a journey.
Yeah.
All right.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, PC.
It has
been awesome talking to you. I'm sure you've given our listeners plenty to talk about.
To think about.
Yeah.
This has been good.
Yeah.
Marriage works. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you very much.
To that. So if you have any other questions for PC or for us, please feel free to contact us via Facebook or our email address, and we will try our very best to answer all of those questions. I am T-Mac.
And I'm Cookie Monster.
We with PC, and we out. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Radiant Culture Podcast. If you want to make a contribution, make a suggestion, or have a request, you can get in touch with us via email on radiant@thehub.co.zw or inbox us on Facebook and Twitter. Look out for the next episode and remember to share this one with everybody you know. God bless.
It's hot, it's fresh, it's uncut. Hashtag Real Talk on the Radiant Culture Podcast.